Hello, friends, and welcome to Pod Return to the Waking Sands. We are a Final Fantasy XIV companion podcast where we explore the lore and story of Hydaelyn and beyond. My name is Jen, and I'm joined by my co-host and researcher.
I'm Levi.
Hello, Levi.
Hello, Jen. So today, Jen, we are concluding our Crystal Tower series with the World of Darkness.
Yeah, we are.
But first, what happened last time, Jen?
Okay, well, last time was Circus Tower. A couple of the strangers rocked up while we were at camp. And they were like, we can help you. And they had red eyes. And Graha was like, hey, I have a red eye. That's weird. We didn't have a way into Circus Tower until the strangers were like, no problem. We got this. They opened the doors. We find out they're actually clones of Allegan royalty. Nero was like, yeah, I fucking knew that shit. Now we have to clear the whole thing. We have to go in and kill Zande. And, you know, then we can start actually doing stuff. We do that. We kill Zande. When he dies, however, a portal opens up to the void, and the cloud of darkness speaks to us from beyond, saying the covenant will be everlasting. And Une and Doga are like, no, it isn't. And before anybody can really do anything significant, Une, Doga, and Nero are sucked into the portal, and it closes, and we're like, what the fuck?
Nice. Thank you, Jen.
Yeah.
So after all that, we return to Rambrose. Well, Rambrose has been trying to find a way for us to get into the void.
Right.
So we come back to him afterwards, and he's got bad news. He's been trying to collect info about how to reach the void, where our companions are trapped, but he has discovered a more serious problem. The tower is still fulfilling Zandi's directive. It is collecting energy to open another void gate. And without our Allegan royals, we cannot turn the tower off. But Graha Tia interjects. They've made another discovery. Apparently, the royals had a means of bestowing their blood upon others. Through this, they would delegate operations of the towers to their underlings and not be the ones having to push the buttons or whatever constantly.
Yeah, which is why Aemon had control of it.
So we've got to find a way, though, to turn the tower off and to annul Zande's pact with the Cloud of Darkness. Otherwise, even without the Covenant active, the tower will still gather energy until it eventually overloads and could trigger another calamity.
Yes, all bad things.
All bad things. To that end, we can at least exploit the tower's actions. As right now it's trying to make a void gate, we can kind of piggyback on that directive and make a void gate for ourselves to access the void. A, quote, man from the Thaumaturge's Guild, versed in otherworldly matters, has assured us of this. I'm not sure who that would be. None of the ones that we met seem to be all that versed in anything besides running away.
Well, oh, that's fucked up, man. It's been a while. I'm
but
sure
true.
They're, you know, they learned their lesson. Who's the master, the eldest? Kokobuki?
Maybe.
I don't remember their name.
Kokobusi.
Koko something.
Kokomusi.
Could have been him. I mean, he seemed pretty learned.
Anyway, it could be one of the guild masters or could be another person that we've not yet met. They say that we can use a void gate to gain access to the void ourselves, and Cid is working on a mechanism to create a portal right now. Speaking of, Cid shows up. The device is about ready.
Yep, they just need to do some last minute tuning and asks that we all join him up at the top. And up at the top meaning Zandi's throne room.
Throne tower top.
Throne area.
Throne so platform.
At the top, we're all hanging. And Graha is like pondering Zandi's throne. And Cid notices and he muses that once a symbol of Allegan's supremacy is now just an empty chair. And, you know, what if Alleg had persisted? And what if there were a just emperor sitting there today? You know, how much more advanced of a society would we be? You know, he kind of laments that a little bit, but, you know, there was no stopping Zande's ambition. And Graha was like, well,
Graha clutches his eye again.
Yeah, it's almost like he's having like these memories or this knowledge is being like funneled through him. Like he doesn't know this, but it's like there's something inside of him that's telling him this, and he's just kind of reciting whatever this thing is telling him in his head, which is exactly what's happening. He's like, I don't know how I know this, but I know this.
What he knows is that there were Alagans that tried to rise up and stop Emperor Zandi. They were beacons of light in their age, not unlike the Warrior of Light. But, however, this uprising hastened the destruction of the Empire as Zandi lashed out, feeling cornered. As he was backed into the tower by these rebel elements, he ordered that the stored power in Dalamud be unleashed into the tower all at once. And though the tower withstood the energy, the land did not. Hence the calamity of Earth.
Yeah, so it wasn't Zandi just kind of like, you know what? Today is the day. It was literally in the middle of a rebellion. And he's like, fuck all y'all, I'm going to do this now. And destroyed everything. Well, Cid is impressed. Like, man, your knowledge of Alag is really, like, second to none. There's, you know, I could study for two lifetimes and not know what you know. And he's like, I don't know how I know this.
But just then, Biggs pings Cid. They're ready to go. There's enough energy being channeled here to float 5 Agrius airships. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
So we gather up and Cid gives the word. The spires of crystal around the throne light up, their energy coalescing in the center into a void rift. Don't celebrate yet, says Cid. The rift is unstable. It won't last for long. The engineers here will stay and maintain it, leaving us, the Warrior of Light, to delve into the void alone, along with 23 of our closest friends.
Right.
Rambrose says it's our only shot, so make sure it counts.
Rambrose, Cid, team, you know, everybody, like, all right, and break. And they all go to their respective stations to before we actually do the thing. And Graha asks us if he could just have a word real quick. We meet him out by the Sentinels again, which is apparently where we have, like, you know, difficult conversations. He has always wondered about his inherited eye, of course. And Doga said it speaks to his destiny, but, like, how? What does that mean? And the more he learns about the tower, the less he is himself. And ever since meeting the clones, something has been eating away at him, like some deep memory locked away that's trying to make itself known to him. And like he can't access it yet. And it's driving him nuts. So he wants to join us. He wants to go into the void with us. And hopefully maybe there he can find some answers.
Hopefully. So we accept. We give him a nod.
Like, absolutely, dude.
He is welcome to join. And we now have unlocked the World of Darkness. Thank you to our 23 friends that joined us on this run, on this minimum item level World of Darkness run.
So the 23 Warriors of Light, it's a lot of Warriors of Light, who joined us on this run, starting with the DPS, are Seo Mihata, Oroki Fenan, Raven Ghostpa, Mervin Corvus, Chi Miu, Otis Oldthing, that's me, Quasar Red, Golden Abbey, Auricula Meritricula, that's a really fun name, Naughty Ivy, Naughty is in Knotty, Quill Lyric, Hingis Dingus, Nefla Highwind, Calidus Caddis, and Sheer Grub. And our healers were Astra Amaricia, Cataplexia Lumino, Vestal Gorgonoth, Rina Chelaway, Kiko Fay, and Freya Highwind, no relation. And our tanks were Shu Shuket.
Thank you.
Levi, Dupontau Jessel, and Fiona Redane.
Nice. Thank you, Jent. And thank you again, everyone.
Thank you. I
appreciate everyone joining us as always.
Yeah. Everybody's very skilled.
So much to some individuals' dismay, this run at min eye level was almost the same as a normal sync to run.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few new mechanics, but this syncs, I think, to item level 90, if I'm recalling correctly, and the actual full sync for ADR is 130, so a 40 item level difference, much less than like Luda, for instance.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit harder, but it was not extremely difficult. And we aced every fight, no wipes, a couple of hairy moments, but nothing extreme.
Yeah.
So great.
Great.
We finally enter the void itself, an emptiness with nothing but dark clouds that loom in the distance. There's no land, no earth, as far as the eye can see, just drifting chunks of material that hang in space.
Spooky.
Yes. On these are some spooky structures. We have menacing open halls and amphitheaters. Unless the darkness twisted the original architecture, they either had very eclectic tastes building these things or decided to build them post-apocalypse and lean into the, you know, the vibe of the place.
Or all of the above. Who knows?
Or all of the above. Yeah. So we head up to our first fight, which is just a warm-up. We've got some manticores, and then a dragon drops down midway through along with some ninjas. The main thing about this fight here is that there are some big circle AoEs that will drop in the arena, and the manticores also will do their own tiny AoEs too. So if you are dodging the giant AoEs, you can be forced into these little tiny safe spaces, and then a manticore will drop like a cleave on you, and either you have to squeeze into like a little bitty safe space, or maybe just like eat a cleave because there's nowhere safe to actually move to between the two overlapping AoEs. A tank can eat a hit even on min eye level and not die, so it's fine, just a bit hairy. We kill the trash fight and we move on. And we find our first boss. This is Angra Mineyu on a circular platform surrounded by carved pillars of dark stone. This guy is an oversized Ahriman.
He's very fancy.
He looks really cool. He also has a back eyeball.
Oh, it's Voldemort.
Yeah.
So this fight, it still eludes me because I didn't hear anything you said about the mechanics.
Because you weren't in the Discord.
Because, yeah, I was like, hey, guys, is Shu talking? And everybody's like, yup. And I'm like, what is happening? So I'm in Discord and I'm trying to figure out like my voice settings. I'm like, all right, the headset I'm wearing is the correct output. I'm not talking. I use my open back headphones because they're so much more comfortable. So I didn't have voice. So I was like, output's the only thing that mattered. And that was right. Testing worked out. And I'm like, I still can't hear you. And I'm like, what is wrong? And then everybody's like, Jen, you're not even like in here. That would do it. So I finally get into the chat and Levi is like, all right. And those are the mechanics. Let's do it. And I'm like, well, I'll just die.
It's okay. I know that you're a pro, Jen, and you survived.
I did die. I don't know how the fight works.
But you got better.
I got better.
Yeah.
People saved me. Oh, who are the healers on my team? There was one in particular that kept saving me all the time. Oh, it was Vestal. Like, sorry, bro. Anyway,
it's good.
Yeah, but then that was fixed, and that was fine.
Here's how it goes, Jen. First off, this guy causes pain even for normal synced runs, and it might be the first indication as to if you're going to have a smooth time or a rough time in your particular ADR run. The main thing he does that was going to fuck you up is he's got a giant I-beam that hits super hard, even on regular synced, in a line before him. And it's a fat fucking line. If your tank is not pointing him away from the party, or if you've got DPS or healers that like to drift out of their lane and stand behind the tank or whatever, or if you have your tanks fighting over aggro and spinning the boss, then he's going to beam a giant energy beam into most of your party and fuck your shit up hardcore.
Yeah.
One tank only, point him away from the party, don't go behind the tank.
Can you imagine back in the day when alliances had two tanks and then there were six tanks fighting over aggro? Can you imagine? Let's not imagine.
No. God, what a pain. Right. For like a single boss fight with six tanks. What the fuck?
That looks stupid. I'm imagining it visually. That looks dumb.
And that's why I don't tank on ADR. Because it sucks.
Yeah.
This seems like a solved problem to an extent because they have a lot of content where they force tank swaps. It's unfortunately mostly harder content that they actually make both tanks involved. On the Savage tier that we did, Jen, every fight had a both tank mechanic. Either they have like a stacking debuff or you have a tank swap where you have to double soak a buster and then swap the primary target. There was something for tanks to do in every single fight. There's none of this like extra, vestigial tank bullshit that happens
seriously
in a lot of easier fights.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a separate gripe.
It is.
So moving on. Don't be in the beam. Next up, the other big killer is double vision. This will make half of the arena turn red and half turn white. You get a debuff matching your color. No big deal. But the next time he casts double vision, if you're not on the opposite color, you'll get a stacking debuff. This does fat damage on the first stack and instant kill on the second stack. If you get three in a row, you're going to die.
Yeah, I think that got me once.
What I do when I play this fight is I will soak a hit in one color, and then I will stand in the opposite half of the arena as a reminder to myself that I belong here now.
Mm.
So I can just not move when it comes out and be fine.
Nice.
Then there is the roulette. Not ADR, but just normal roulette. The arena will be divided into four quadrants, and a big white-gloved Final Fantasy menu-style hand will begin to spin around the arena from the center. It points to each quadrant in turn. At the same time, a big hourglass will appear in each quadrant, and they can be killed. You should kill at least two of these hourglasses, because once that hand stops spinning, the section it points to is going to be insta-killed. Everyone in that quadrant is going to die, period. If the hourglass is still intact in that quadrant, it will freeze players in place. They cannot escape. If the hourglass is dead, you can leave that quadrant. You'll not be locked in place. So really, you just got to kill one or two hourglasses and then stand in those quadrants, and then you can leave. You don't have to kill all four of them.
Nice.
Yeah. Beyond that, the other mechanics are fairly easy. You've got Mortal Gaze. It's just a gaze attack that inflicts doom on you. If you get doomed, if you don't turn away from the gaze, you can walk on these like white glowing platforms and get it cleansed. No big deal.
I tried that. I don't think I lingered long enough. It's like, oh shit, I have doom. I should probably stand on a thing. And then I did, and it didn't go away. And then I died.
Sucks to be Jin.
Sucks to be Jin.
He also has level 100 flare. It's just a big red ball that tethers to players, run away, whatever. And then level 150 death. Same thing pretty much. Once a player gets tethered, just like run away from the death balled person. If the number of players in the effect is a multiple of three, then everyone dies. Because three times level 50 is 150, so it's just like the other level X deaths, essentially. If you all run away and there's one person left over, that is enough to clear the mechanic. No one dies. And finally, Jin, we get adds. There will be little Aramons that come out during the fight. They will do heavy raid wides if you don't kill them, so kill the adds like you always do. Done, fight over.
Ta-da! Yeah, pretty much sailed through that.
Yep, it was real easy. We defeat Angra Mainyu, and a bridge of pure light appears, allowing us to reach the next floating chunk of land. So now we fight Scylla.
Her name is different, isn't it? It's like Queen Scylla or something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on here. We also get, halfway through the fight, a Zandage clone. I'm assuming that Scylla here is also like a void-tainted clone. Because yeah. We killed the actual Scylla, as far as I know, in the Crystal Tower itself.
Yeah.
So we see Scylla here again. She's a very easy version of the Scylla fight. There's no real fuck you mechanics, even on the min eye level.
Yeah.
So we beat her down. During the fight, there'll be void portals that appear on the periphery of the arena. You can attack the portals and destroy them. If you don't, they will summon void scent. It's a good time for casters in range to limit break, because you can hit multiple portals with one limit break and tip the balance from getting adds to killing the portals.
Nice.
After you kill Scylla, there'll be a chest on the ground. It's a trap. You open the chest,
what?
And Zandi's clone pops
surprise,
out.
Surprise, motherfucker.
He's also super easy, so not a very good clone, honestly. We kill him, and we move on.
They're probably just hoping for a greater like psychological effect. Like, oh, fuck, and then we run away just because it's, oh, shit, it's Zandi.
Maybe.
And we fight him, and he's nothing.
Then we get to the five-headed dragon. This was one of our tougher fights, I think.
I feel like I died to this one, too.
Cool.
Super cool.
This is a five-headed dragon, also known as a Hydra.
Yes.
So it's got a ton of mechanics. This guy has so many things going on in this fight, and it has mechanics that you don't see often in normal runs of the fight. So first off, there's a big area of effect on the floor and of ice. If you get caught in it, you'll get frozen, and it keeps like growing. So pretty much book it from the ice. Mm. You can feed it by being caught in it further. So run away from the area of effect like you do. Then there is the adds mechanic. This fight has slime puddles. So a big poison swamp will appear on the ground, and a slime will emerge from it. The poison swamp persists. Standing in it will hurt you a lot. So what you do is you want to kill the slimes And when the slimes die, they will hit the nearby players with a poison resistance buff. Hopefully an off tank or a DPS will get this buff, and then they will stand in the slime puddle. You standing in the puddle will keep it from spawning more slimes. If you don't, it'll keep on spawning slimes. The buff helps you tank the damage from the puddle. Stand on the spawn point. No more slimes come out. It'll vanish eventually.
Like, I have slime power now.
Correct. That's the adds mechanic. There's also other adds, which are glowing white orbs, which cast prominence. They're raid whites. Just kill the adds, whatever. Kill the orbs. Easy. Also, a player will be targeted by a weird glowing yellow marker that looks kind of like a turbine to me. This person will explode into a big AoE that knocks players up into the air and they fall back down. This player with this marker should run away from the party and do not stand by them if you're not that player, to not take out many people with the knock up effect. Then you got the...
Everybody gets pregnant? What?
Yeah.
Suck.
Then you got the red bird. This is a bird that appears and tethers to a random player. This player begins taking some serious damage. What you want to do here is you want to juggle the tether across multiple players. So you interrupt it, you pass it on to a new player, they get hurt and so on. Just kind of pass the buck a little bit until the bird disperses. Not too bad. Then we have the actual five-headed mechanic. Midway through the fight, all of the five heads become targetable, and you have to take out all five heads to zero health in this time period before the dragon finishes casting its cast bar, or it'll wipe the raid. Good time for AoEs, for limit breaks, whatever. Just kill the heads. Do not try and DPS the dragon's main body during this mechanic. Just the heads, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
Sadly, this does not cut the heads off, which would be cool, but no dice. You just beat them down.
Worming around on the floor. Yep.
And the last mechanic is Heat Wave. Heat Wave is...
burning in my heart.
Heat Wave is very much like an early version of a later fire-based mechanic. When Heat Wave goes out, the whole arena turns red, and you get a 5-second debuff. During the debuff's duration, any action you take will deal damage to you. So stop pressing buttons, stop attacking, just hit escape and hold for 5 seconds until the debuff ticks down. You're good to go. And that's that. That's the fight. So we press on now to more Atomos. This is a redux of the labyrinth mechanic where you have to have the three alliances split into three separate groups. Each one takes a separate jump pad onto these two-tiered circular platforms that have the Atomos in the center.
Yeah, it's like a layer cake.
Yes, like a layer cake. There are jump pads on the bottom platform that will kind of blink on and off. You can use to jump up to the upper tier of each platform if you get knocked off or if you hop off. And then you fight the Atomos. Just like before, you got to DPS them all at the same rate, more or less, and then kill them. They have one real gimmick, which is they will mark a player with a little target marker. That player will get sucked into the maw of the Atomos and then get spit back out again. I understand that you can hop off the edge of the upper tier if you get marked and avoid the suck in effect. Either way, though...
You're still off the platform.
Well, sure, but then you can hop back on versus being absorbed into the maw.
True, and that seems like a nightmare. So
because
do
also,
that.
It will spit the player back out and do like a big cone attack as well.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't jump off, though, at least do not be by other players because it will suck in any other players near you when it tries to suck in the target player.
Sound reasoning.
And then it's got a shockwave attack. This will knock everyone on the upper platform to the bottom platform, except you can either use your anti-knockback effect to resist this, or you can stand inside the Atomos little target circle. If you do so, it will not knock you back far enough to fall off the upper platform.
Pro tip.
Ultimately, kind of like an easy gimmick fight.
Yeah,
not,
you're gonna get knocked off, you get back on, you fight, you know.
Yeah, it's not hard.
Yeah, you're not gonna die. It's just takes longer.
Yep. Okay, now we get to Cerberus. I like this fight a lot, Jen.
This fight is a whole thing, and people were very excited. I mean, this is a whole vor. Situation.
Everyone's into Vor.
So there's Vor and or you. Yeah, there's some shit going on. There's chains. There's getting eaten. There's wolves.
It's the meme that everyone gets into the belly.
Into the belly. A, always be in the belly. B, belly time for you. And C, come on in, get in this belly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cerberus is, of course, a three-headed hound. He's in a long rectangular arena, and he starts chained up to these pillars. These chains will burst during the fight. The way that you are, quote, supposed to handle the fight is that you split into three groups. Alliance A handles adds, Alliance B gets in the belly, and Alliance C handles the chains. But like Jen said beforehand, you can mostly all go in the belly and you're probably good. Yeah. You can kind of rush the belly phase by all piling in there.
So for real, yeah.
It's all good. Do whatever. It's all fine. But before the belly part, though, the fight opens up with just Cerberus. Be mindful of his tail swipe. That's the gotcha. He does a fat, knockback, high-damage tail swipe with a very fast cast bar.
So don't stand there. Just don't.
Yes. If you're a melee, you can probably get out of the way. If you're like a ranged or caster and standing midway back from the boss like you normally do, you will not be able to dodge the tail swipe before it goes off. So just be on his flanks.
Yeah.
Save his call, ultimately. He will also charge across the arena. He targets a player and does a line charge towards them. If you're not the target, then just don't be between Cerberus and his target. That's that pretty much. There's also some adds. They are Wolfsbane plants. Kill them like you do. Then there is Ululation, which is a fear effect. It's kind of cute. If you are by a party member, not a raid member, but a party member, you'll be safe from it. If you are alone, you'll get feared and run around.
I got that.
Yeah.
I was too far away.
Got to buddy up, Jen.
Yep.
Stop being a rogue element.
Ranged problems.
Right. Those are the overall fight mechanics. The real one, though, is the, of course, the chains and belly. That's what we're here for, Jen.
Yeah.
Here for that belly.
That's the meat and potatoes.
So partway through the fight, Cerberus will break his chains and he starts to get stacking buffs that are essentially a soft enrage. The way that you shut this down is you got to rechain him. He's got some indigestion and you got to settle down his stomach and then get him back under control.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if like anybody with an ulcer could just be like, all right, you five, I'm going to shrink you down, put you in my belly, and then you guys can just like pew, pew, pew my ulcers away and then I'll poop you out. It'll be great.
Judging from the sample size of our raid, a lot of people don't actually know how to get in the belly, Jen. So here's how it works. After the chains break, there will be little purple balls that spawn that are called gastric orbs. Do not kill these orbs. They are good adds. Instead, you want to be near them because they will pulse out gastric juice all around them. If you get hit by the juice, you get made mini. This is a good thing. This time. During the same phase, Cerberus will puke up big purple goo piles on the ground. If you are mini, go stand in a goo pile. If you are maxi, do not stand in a goo pile.
Yep.
Because, just like dogs do and cats, Cerberus will gobble back up his puke. And
yeah, no, it's gross.
And anyone who is mini in the puke pile will be eaten by Cerberus. Full-size players will die automatically. And once you're in the goo, you cannot leave. You're stuck there. So again, don't be in there unless you're mini. The players who are mini, though, will slide down his gullet into his stomach. This is really cool. It's really good. So first off, the music gets super echoey. There's like a custom track for the stomach where you can hear the boss fight music. Yes. You hear it like you're inside a belly, you know? So it's echoey. It's muffled. Like, it's really cool.
It's like you're in a, like a loud ass fucking nightclub and then you go to the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. And you're inside this interior stomach that has pools of stomach acid on the ground in little like half digested lumps, I'm assuming, or whatever here. And then there are stomach ulcers on the wall and you gotta excise those ulcers.
Yeah.
There are also little ads in here too. There are like the hectis, I think, right?
I don't know.
Okay, there's some kind of ad in the stomach. I was on...
Yeah, there's different enemy types.
I was on main tank duty this fight, so I did not go in the belly myself. I was one of the unlucky few who had to stay outside.
Wah, wah.
It's okay. I've done it before.
Yeah.
So anyways, when you're in there, you want to kill the ulcers on the wall. You want to excise all those ulcers, and then Cerberus will go to sleep. It make him feel better.
Yeah, he's like, oh, finally.
And then
we just start like wailing on
him. Yeah, you'll get spit back out. Cerberus goes to bed, and then you can attach the chains back to his collar. This is also not super intuitive, at least if you're panicking in the moment. What you do to reattach the chains is two players will need to go and grab the chains from those columns they're attached to. There'll be little sparkly interaction points. You grab it and you'll bring a long tether that looks like a chain to Cerberus. Cerberus will have a sparkling interaction point on either side of his collar. So right click on the pillar or press your controller button. Who knows what the fuck that is? Interact with the pillar. Drag the chain to Cerberus, interact with his collar to attach the chain.
All right, that seems pretty intuitive, actually.
Sure, except that you've got like maybe 15 seconds to do it, and if you're not sure... Because sometimes you'll get like a custom action bar, or who knows what the fuck. Sometimes you'd like walk on a thing and it makes it happen. It's not always the same thing. And if you're panicking and you're in a fight and have the responsibility, then, you know, you might...
miss it.
Yeah.
Yes.
But just click the thing... click the other thing, you're good to go. There is a life hack where because Cerberus stays asleep until after you attach his chains to him, people will sometimes not attach chains until his wake-up bar almost finishes. This gives you a bunch of free DPS with no opposition. Of course, though, if you miss the window, then he bursts the chain that's on him and wakes up and begins his sopped in a rage. So, you know... if you do it, Godspeed.
Fire beware, yeah.
Yes, we did. It worked fine. But, you know, I've seen cases where people tried to be cute and they're too slow. And then he wakes up again and fuck you.
Rip.
Yep. So that's the fight. If you do all that, you're good to go. With Min Eye Level, we actually had a second belly phase.
Yeah.
He bursts his chains again. The belly phase repeated. And then we killed him mid belly phase.
He just explodes and everybody's like, bleh. Spit out on the arena, like, what just happened?
Yep, that is Cerberus. I like this a lot. It's very creative. I wish we had more things like this, because like having this special little zone you get sucked into, it's really cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. So now we reach the Cloud of Darkness herself. The cloud is an enormous head, upper torso, and arms of a woman. The rest of her is a swirling black cloud. Approps.
Oh, yeah, because she's the Cloud of Darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the so-called ruler of the void.
This is the big time, guys. We did it.
Not yet.
Take me to your leader. Like, boom, there she is.
So this fight takes place on a giant arena with geometric patterns on the ground, but they're not super relevant.
No, they aren't.
So what you want to do is you all want to fight her on one side of the arena. Do not stand in the middle because she does a giant energy beam and that will fuck you up.
Mm-hmm.
So always be on her flank. She will beam every time she moves.
Yeah, no, I've done this 3 times. In probably as many years. So I did it the first time because it's part of the story, and then 2 times because I got it randomly in ADR. So I don't know what the fuck. So you just, when she leaves, I'm like, what's going on? And then you got to do the camera spin to figure out where the fuck she lands, because it's going to be at any one of the cardinal positions. And then she will do the big, like, boom, all the way, you know, across the arena. I think it's like a third of the arena.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Yeah.
So get to that flank. She will also do a faint particle beam. This can be a hard mechanic to deal with sometimes. This is one of the ones where you get that little kind of like liney marker on you that looks like arrows pointing in a direction. This is the mechanic that will chase a target player. So if you get an AoE on you that has little arrows on it, you want to run away from it because you're going to be targeted by an attack that's going to chase you.
So this I got by. So what I thought was happening was that when it's like it's glowing on you and it's pulsating on you, the graphic. And so I ran like away and along the perimeter of the arena. And then when the graphic stopped, I'm like, cool. I baited it to go where I just ran. It'll follow the path I just ran. while it was like glowing and pulsating and like reading my movements. That's what I thought was going on. Not so. When the graphic stops, that is when it starts tailing you.
Yes.
So don't be like me where I'm like, fuck you, man, sucker. And I run back into everybody. And then it starts throwing bullshit on top of me. And I'm like, what is happening?
Yes. So what you should do is not what Jen did.
Not what Jen did.
This one took me a while too. This mechanic appears in other content and it took me a while to get down the timing too. So you're not alone, Jen, with that.
Yay.
It's okay. Like Jen said, the telegraph is telling you that this mechanic will happen to you. It's not locking on to you just yet. So if you get this little, like the arrow marker on you, get the fuck away from the party. Don't bring your shit to the party. And then start moving. Do not stop moving until you see the AoEs come out behind you. There'll be vertical beams that blast the ground behind you as you're moving. If you keep moving, you're fine. If you stop...
They'll just get you. They'll just keep pummeling you in that same location.
Hits you again and again and again. Yeah, and if you get caught by it, you're done. So that is the faint particle beam. She also has a tower mechanic called Comets. This is just, again, a tower. One player soaks each comet, stand in the thing. Otherwise, it's a big raid wide. Easy.
Easy.
After surviving all that stuff, we get to the cloud phase. Oh, final note is that on min eye level, she fucking hits hard. She does the tank buster auto attack. Also, like a bleed attack. So you get like a heavy ticking bleed on you, plus the auto attacks, which hit for a fuck ton. It's a lot of damage to take for one tank. So it's one of the highest, I think, persistent damage bosses in this raid series.
Nice.
On the tank.
Yeah. Damn.
Regardless, though. So yeah, we got the clouds. She will start sucking in darkness. We get small clouds and big clouds. They'll be pulled across the arena towards her into her sucking maw.
I tend to suck in the daytime.
Cool. Well, Jen, there's no day or night in the void, so.
It's weird to think that we could be fighting her and it's like noon. High noon. Whatever.
I think that the sun is this weird kind of purple blue orb in the sky.
Of course it is.
But I don't know what the fuck that is for sure. Anyway, yeah, she pulls these clouds across the arena towards her. There are big clouds and small clouds. Big ones have more health. DPS the clouds. You can apply a heavy effect to the clouds if you have a heavy ability like ranged DPS do, for instance. This will slow them down. If you stand in their path, they also get slowed down. Usually not.
That's cute.
Not required. Should be easy enough if you focus fire on them, but that is an option to you if you have to. If she absorbs too many clouds, then she will wipe the raid. She'll power up and wipe the raid. We kill the clouds. And after that, we get to the last real mechanic of the fight, which is the mini arena mechanic. There'll be faint geometric lines appearing on the ground. There are three dark clouds that appear with lines around them on the ground. Each alliance should go to one of these clouds because pretty soon those faint lines will power up into like full on force fields and lock the people inside into that mini arena and lock everyone else out of it. And you have to, each alliance or each group must DPS the cloud inside the arena within the time limit or it's going to wipe the raid.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, did you coordinate? Did you either get lucky and have people split enough, or did you coordinate who's taking what?
22 people in one.
Right, because if that happens, then you're going to wipe because the other two will not be able to be killed in the time limit. If you can coordinate that successfully, then you kill the clouds, the force fields disperse, you can kill the boss, donezo. Except, Jen, for the worms.
Here we go.
Yeah.
It's like the second most popular meme from this whole...
Yeah. There is a little known mechanic in this fight, which is the worm phase. This happens after the comets and the first cloud sucking phase before the arena mechanic. If you've hit the arena mechanic, you've gone too far. It's around 45% health. You will blow past this DPS wise and skip the mechanic on normal synced, almost guaranteed, unless you're having a very rough time in your raid. And I understand that even on min eye level, you can also skip this mechanic with the current, probably like, you know, job power level, whatever. Mm. We slowed our DPS at this point to make sure we saw this mechanic, to make sure we saw the whole fight. Around 45%, you get worms. These are glowing yellow worms that pop out of the ground. You have to play whack-a-mole here. When a worm pops out, shoot them. Do like a single range attack against them and they'll go back in. If you don't whack the worms, Jin, they will do a bad breath attack, giving you all the debuffs and make your life hell.
Yay.
So
or a veil, but in the void.
Right. Whack the worms and they'll go back down and you're good to go.
Boop.
Pretty easy overall.
Whack the worms.
Yeah. We do that. We defeat the cloud and she disperses into ether. And now Graha, who's been somewhere this whole time, joins us at last.
Yeah. They fix this in later raid series where, like narratively, if there is a scion or somebody accompanying you, they will be there and they will be saying stuff, you know, as you maybe transition from one fight to the next, and like they actually exist in the fight and you can see them. But they did not do it in this case. We can just assume that he was hanging out like behind a pillar or something.
Just out of sight. Graha now comes up to us, wondering where the captives are. Doga, Une, and Nero. Without them, this foray doesn't count for much.
Yeah, so it's disconcerting that we've done the thing, we've defeated the thing, and our friends are nowhere. They're nowhere. So Graha starts like yelling their names, like, Une, Doga. And then a voice behind us, as he does, is like, would you please be quiet? Do you want to attract more void scent? And it is Nero with Une and Doga. And Une is, she's passed out and Nero is carrying her. Nero looks fucked up. He looks almost like he is coated in ice, like he's made out of ice. But it's
purple ultraviolet ice.
Yeah, he's just consumed by darkness. Like his eyes are totally like whited over. He looks very creepy. So what happened was he had existing wounds and the darkness was able to seep into his body and is now like consuming him from the inside out. Une and Doga are good because of their Allegan blood, their royal Allegan blood. They are not susceptible to just like the dark, the void environment.
That's because of the pact with the cloud.
Right. So like there's protection there.
Yes.
They are not protected, however, from the denizens of the void. So Voidsen can actually like attack them and they're not immune to that shit. So Nero this whole time has been fighting Voidsen off to protect these two. And you're like, aw, you know, like the devil with a heart of gold. And he's like, no, fuck you. I need these guys for to do my bidding later on. This is the only reason why I'm protecting him. I'm like, okay, man. Nobody like humors him when he says this. I don't fucking need you, like, whatever. Like, nobody responds, nobody enables. They're just like, we all see you, yeah. Because they are still vulnerable to void scent, the cloud purposefully left them in this place. Like, what a bitch.
She can't attack them because of the pact.
Right, so it's a loophole. It's a big, fat fucking loophole.
I'm not hitting you, my friend's
hitting
you.
Do not mistake my actions for kindness, blah, 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 like, whatever. So Une wakes up. Like, she's fine. She just, you know, it's... I can't imagine how stressful this would be.
She got tired.
You know, she had a little nap. The cloud appears again, but she doesn't really appear. She's still, like, fucked up. She is dispersed. There is no, like, solid form for her, but she still, you know, exists as an entity in the space.
The cloud speaks from the void. Mortals, you have dared to challenge me, and now you must feel my wrath. Here I am eternal.
Boom. And this is where the cloud again vows to kill us. Graha asks if there's, like, is there anything we can do here? Like, are we completely fucking powerless in this environment? And Doga was like, a little bit, but if we can strike her while she is out of body, then there might be a chance. And
right. While she's weakened, they can sever the pact.
Yeah, exactly.
Sever the covenant.
This is the time. This is the moment.
And they will raise the bridge to the Crystal Tower once and for all. Once the cloud is defeated and the pact is annulled, then this connection that binds our two worlds will be severed. It will likewise be annulled with the pact. And so they cannot get back to the Crystal Tower afterwards. They urge us to flee now while Doga and Une go about their business, go about fulfilling their duty.
Right. And Graha is like, that can't happen. I mean, it has to happen, but we need you back on the other side, because without you, there is absolutely no way to control the tower. And that is an existential threat to the realm on the other side. So like, what the fuck do we do now?
But just then, the cloud gets sick of this endless talking and blasts us with a particle beam striking at Graha Tia. Graha flinches, but the beam disperses harmlessly around him. The cloud shouts from the void.
What is this trickery? And
she shouts, your blood. You too gain protection from Zande's blood.
What? But yes, that's the elegant eye. He has royal blood within him.
Yes. So Une and Doga conclude that someone planted blood in Graha's line at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And this eye is the remnant of whoever infused his line way back in the day.
It's planning ahead, man.
I'll say.
So this was a very timely thing for the cloud to do while we're like, but how do we control the tower back in Eorzea? And she's like, boop, I'm going to shoot this at Graha and you're going to see that he's immune, which means he also has the power to control the tower.
Well, not yet. The tower may not recognize him as Elegan, but the eye bespeaks a simple truth. Within him dwells a feeble glitter that will illuminate all, the light of hope. This is also a Final Fantasy III callback, by the way. This is why they hammer on the hope message a lot. If you're wondering, Jen, why they're hitting that word a lot in this cutscene.
Okay.
That's all. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, it wasn't discordant. It was just...
Oh, it triggered a thing in me because...
You played it.
Oh, that too. And also, it's like, they're really saying like light of hope a lot in this cutscene. What's the deal with that? And I was like, oh, because they're echoing the lines from 3.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. It's cool. Like, this all checks out.
So, Une conjures a ember of light. This is actually her blood, like atomized or whatever, but it looks like a little fiery ember.
It's a glowing moat of her royal blood.
She says that the clones will share their blood with Graha, bolstering his elegant presence. As for them, they must fulfill their destiny, severing the covenant. But as long as the light of hope survives in Graha, their souls will remain, though their bodies may be lost.
We knew this was going to happen. We knew we were going to be besties and be able to hang out and have coffee with Une and Doga.
Did we?
I mean, maybe for a time, but I mean, they were like, we have to fulfill our purpose. So, and that purpose was not, you know, chilling.
Your purpose
but like,
is not
but,
to
you know,
chill.
The time has come now. We have to leave them behind. And they have to urge us to leave. Because once they annul the covenant, we would not be able to return. So right. there's no option here. We have to go. They have to do this now while she is incorporeal.
Une and Doga both combine their blood essence into this ember. And it drifts across the void to Graha, who seizes it. He absorbs their power. There is a heartbeat sound, and now both of Graha's eyes are red.
Sweet.
Now the pair turn to Nero. He has to go too. Oh, and you dropped this, says Une, giving him his wristometer.
Yeah. She tells him that what you seek by this instrument may not be possible, Nero, but do not give up. There are many other paths for you. It just shows how transparent Nero is and how, like, we all kind of felt a little something for him. You know, he's trying a little too hard. He's being very defensive. We see you, bro. His response to this is, of course they do. Perfect. All right. We say our goodbyes and we start running to the portal.
Right. Graha says that he will never forget Une and Doga, and now it's time to escape this place. This is kind of funny to me, Jen, because we've had this very long, drawn-out scene, then suddenly it's crisis time.
We gotta bail, and then the cloud of darkness starts like, pew, 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 pew.
Unfortunately, this game never gets good at this kind of thing, like where time stops for these long, drawn-out conversations.
They let
then,
us monologue, you know.
Yeah, and everyone like hangs out by us, letting us talk, and then shit picks up after the conversation's over. I don't love it, but I suppress.
Maybe because we're warriors of light, we just have like a, we get like a vibe. We're like, we're fine. Like, ooh, now we got to go. Like we can read the space and how things are going to, that's my canon.
Sure. Whatever the case may be, I try to not let it bother me because I'd be annoyed a lot if I did.
Oh,
but
for sure.
It's absurd. We had this long conversation, then suddenly it's like runtime, particle beams go flying in all directions around us.
So he was like, okay, you can give Nero his thing back. You can give Graha the ability to shut this whole thing down. I'll watch, let it happen. Okay, then they start running and I'm going to shoot shit at you. you know.
But anyway, yeah. So we make our break for the exit as the cloud harries our escape. Meanwhile, Une and Doga face the cloud directly. Here, Zande's legacy ends, and they channel ether into the darkness. Meanwhile, we are rushing on a bridge of light to the void gate. It grows faint as the covenant is annulled. The bridge between realms will soon be severed. Nero, weakened by his wounds and by this growing darkness within him, begins to stagger, and he falls to his knees. He cries for us to leave him. Graha stops, but Nero yells at him to leave. If he dies, it'll be on his terms.
Yeah, he's like, if I die here, it's because that's what I decided to do.
Right. And he failed to master the darkness, but he won't suffer watching a, quote, green boy master the tower.
You got to deal with your issues, man. but yeah, like, that's how he frames this. He failed to master the darkness. You had no chance here, buddy.
But to hammer in the point further, he goes on, remember me, son of Aleg. He is Nero Tolskeva, the man who will yet outdo Aleg and Garland.
Issues.
Graha looks back to regard him, and suddenly he clutches his eye again. Some sort of elegant awakening has struck Graha, a memory welling up inside him. May the Crystal Tower again be a beacon of hope for mankind.
And at this, Nero has, you know, his final missive is, no, seriously, fucking go, leave me. Graha looks at us, we nod, and we both book it to the portal, leaving Nero behind.
But suddenly, the darkness within Nero disperses, and he says to himself, those damn clones, they did it after all. Now that they've severed this pact, and they apparently have dispersed the power of darkness here, or whatever is happening, Nero is now freed from this kind of, you know, cancer that has stricken him from the darkness.
But now he's got to fucking book it. Like, he's not going to make it. He stands, he realizes what's happening, and he sprints for his life towards the portal that is rapidly becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. And just like before, he makes a final desperate leap towards the opening. It's not happening. And with his arm outstretched, he's just going to miss it. Except an arm comes through the opening at that moment. They grab one another, and Cid is halfway into the void, and he's like, you owe me, Nero. And Nero's like, the hell I do. So, fuck, after he just sat there on this bridge of light with only seconds left to exist, he is consumed by darkness. He has accepted his fate here. He's being eaten away by darkness. He tells himself, he cries out literally into the void, I am Nero Tolskeva, the man who will yet outdo Aleg and Garland. And he is milliseconds away from death. And Cid Nan bloody fucking Garland reaches the thing and saves his life. God damn it. But, you know, he's alive. Like, the just twisting the knife.
Back at the tower, we gain our feet. Everyone is relieved to see us, but they note Une and Doga's absence. We don't say anything, but the message is understood. There's that ominous silence. Rambros says that he will miss them, but he is glad that they fulfilled their purpose. But we must attend to the tower, and now there's no means to seal it. That's where you're wrong, says Graha.
Check out my eyeball.
He has been entrusted with their blood. He can now control the tower. Well, says Rambros, let's get to it. But Graha says, just a moment. We're tired. It's been a lot of shit. Let's go back and get our breath back at base camp before we get about this tower business.
Yeah, Rambros is excited that, you know, there's a solution, there's hope. Like, he's excited to get to move on. And Graha's like, we just need a breather. We're all very tired.
But of course, Graha's already got his plan in place. He's trying to get us out of here. We take him at face value, though, and we all head back to the Sons of St. Koinock camp. And as we're leaving, though, Graha turns to us, our character. He says that only we could have prevailed in the world of darkness. And he wishes that he could have been more useful there, besides as a vessel for elegant blood. We ask him if he remembered what he wanted to, if he got his memory back that was bothering him last time during the Circus Tower story. Yes, replies Graha. He remembered his forebear's dearest wish. But enough of that. Go on ahead. We go on now, following the crew back to base camp, and Graha speaks to our wake. I could not have wished for a better comrade. If only I could have been a part of your adventures for longer. Alas, fate dictates that I have a different role to play. A wish hidden for millennia.
You know, when we first met Graha, he was a certain kind of a person. He had a certain vibe. And as we have gone through the series, he's become more and more like, he's looked within. He's much more serious. He's a completely different person.
Rambros wonders what Graha's up to, and just at that moment, a Sons of St. Coinock researcher rushes up, saying that Graha has been forcing everyone out of the tower. But she doesn't know why. She just came here ASAP to report to Rambros. So Rambros says, we gotta go investigate. I'm sure that Graha means to seal the tower, but I'm not sure why he's going solo suddenly, why he's not being a team player on the matter.
Yeah.
We all head to the tower, and we're standing in the vestibule just outside these giant golden gates that are still standing open. And Graha is standing on the far side of the gates inside the tower, inside the base of the stairway.
Yeah, that we know so well.
Yes. And he yells, go no further, my friends. He means to seal off the tower. Rambros is relieved. He's like, oh, okay, so you just sealing the tower. I mean, let's talk about the plan first. You don't need to like go solo
here.
Yeah,
this seems a little like intense. Also, didn't you want like a nap or something?
Yeah, right. But Graha says no. Just as Une and Doga fulfill their destiny, so he must fulfill his. As his father told him, the truth has always lain with Alag. That is where this wish was born, the one that Graha must now fulfill. Recalling Alag's fall, he goes on. The elegant survivors of the calamity looked to the crystal tower, but it was nowhere to be seen. They hoped for the spires to appear again and be a beacon of hope for the people everywhere. The elegant princess Selena, who survived the calamity, was moved by this wish. She imbued Graha's forebear with her blood and memories to preserve this mission.
Wow.
So Graha must now fulfill it before the power fades from his bloodline forever.
That's right, because when Une and Doga bestowed upon him their blood, they said, this is ephemeral. This won't last forever.
Yes.
So he understands that he's got a ticking clock.
Right. I think this means that, I can't quite tell if it means that it will not be passed on to his descendants, like it's with Graha and then that's where it stops, or if it'll fade in time.
I think, well, it's the blood that exists in his family line will always be there, but it's like half power,
yes,
right? So he needed this like juice from
right.
Une and Doga to do what he needs to do in this moment.
I parse from the text alone that this juice is going to fade in like an hour or two.
I'm so sorry I picked the word juice. That's all we're going to say.
But I think actually in reality, it's more like they have given Graha's blood some juice.
Yeah.
But he cannot pass this on to his descendants. It's not like they
no yeah, like the part that he had within him already, that will go on.
Yes.
But this little bit of extra, he's got to use it or lose it,
right? So this power up here, this dies with Graha. He doesn't want to let this chance fade away.
He understands this is why he's here.
Yes. He says he must fulfill this wish, the wish of the elegant people after the calamity, that the tower would again shine and be a true beacon of hope, not a beacon of terror or oppression. But, says Cid, it's too dangerous. We barely understand the tower, and we may never understand the tower. Graha says yes, but by the time that technology has advanced far enough, by the time that the people of Eorzea can maybe understand what's going on here and have this not be a terrifying, overwhelming force, by that time, his bloodline will be defunct. At least the Allegan power in it will be defunct.
Right.
There's no way for him to keep on, you know, passing on this mission to his children, et cetera, until the world at large is ready for the Crystal Tower. So what he's going to do is put the tower back into stasis. He will sleep with the tower until humanity is able to rival the Allegans in knowledge, when the tower will no longer be an overpowering threat to civilization. Then he will guide them to ensure the tower will be a beacon of hope once more. He tells us then to go forth and to create a future where hope reigns. Fine, says Cid. Onward then to a brighter future. And Wedge chimes in. We'll catch up to Alec before you know it.
Bless him. He's my favorite.
Graha turns to us now, the Warrior of Light. No doubt your heroism will be the star by which I chart my course when I awake. Now, he says, I must rest. Farewell, my friends. And he turns to the tower. The great golden doors slam shut behind him.
Fuck.
Outside, our party disperses, and Cid gives one last look at the gates. Meanwhile, far in the distance, Nero regards the tower. He says to himself, the crystal tower slumbers again, then. 'Tis too quiet for my taste. He looks at his little wrist detection device and says, goodbye, Cid. I must put all this at my back. Possibility beckons and I am bound to follow. He tosses the device into the chasm outside the tower and then turns away. A new dawn has come for me.
Good for you, dude.
Back at St. Quinnox Find, we bid Rambros a final farewell and head on to the next adventure. The end.
I mean, we feel kind of terrified at Graha's future, right? Like being trapped in this thing and having to basically be its guardian for who knows how many centuries, you know, for us to reach the same level of technological or whatever supremacy that Alag did. And, you know, like, well, we're never going to see him again. We'll all be long dead. Our great-grandchildren will be long dead. But, like, he'll be fine. He will never grow old. And he'll be asleep. And it won't matter. The terror, like, how would we feel if we knew that we had to be locked inside of this thing for millennia, probably. But it's not. Like, he won't know. He'll wake up when it's ready, and then he'll be able to, like, get a move on. But he will have outlived everybody he has ever known. Which, that's part of the terror and that's part of the sadness.
I feel like he's kind of a lone cat in a sense. Yes, he likes us, he looks up to us, but he was keeping the other members at arm's length in the expedition. You know, like when we first met him, he was like, fuck your rules, Rambros, I'm doing my own thing. You know, I'm good. I don't get the impression that he is one that has formed a lot of significant bonds so far.
No, I think he establishes bonds with people like right away, because I think he wears himself on his sleeve. Like he lives unashamedly, and he's also a brilliant scholar. And, you know, he's also kind of being driven by this, you know, this essence that lives inside of him, that's lived inside of his family line for however long. He doesn't know it's there, but that might be why. You know, he understands this. His fate is his fate. And like he, you know, a part of him knew at some point he would have to make this decision. You know, I fucking love him. We did not like him at first because he was annoying. But then he like got real because he's just like normal humans. You know, you act out. You don't know how to be around new people. And then you start to understand how everybody operates and you can settle into how you are and you can be real and comfortable and not a little weirdo. And also maybe grow up a little.
A little. You know, I got the feeling that it's more that, like I said, he didn't really have strong bonds because he's not really one that seemed to, I guess, need companionship really so much as, I guess, maybe collaborators more. That was the impression I got from him initially. And he also seemed to me, I guess, like, yes, there is the thing where you're kind of weird around new people, then you figure out your niche and you're good to go. But also it kind of felt to me like he wasn't very well socialized. So we kind of did this weird shit because...
Yeah, he's like, he's very excitable and his energy didn't match the energy of anybody else. And so he was kind of like, you know, a bit of an outsider in that regard. And we're like, man, this guy is intense. But he was still, you know, there was obviously a lot of value in who he was as a person. And like, I felt that, you know, because he confides in you, he becomes vulnerable.
Like, I have to wonder here, Jen, if there was some sort of forum complaint or something about him after the first phase where people hated him, because I feel like his demeanor changed radically between patches, between the Labyrinth of the Ancients patch and then the Circus Tower patch. And I really wish I could find this, or someone maybe might have been there at the time and can tell us. If people were like, this guy sucks, and the devs were like, I don't want people to think that.
No, I hate that. I feel like that had to have been absolutely on purpose to communicate his growth through this.
It could be. I don't know. I feel like his demeanor calmed the way the fuck down. Like, he gained like 5 years of maturity between patches. That was kind of my feeling.
I mean,
here.
If you can imagine, like, you know, being kind of undersocialized because you've been such a fucking bookworm your entire life.
And then suddenly you're like,
I've got to work with people.
I'm not saying it doesn't make sense in terms of a personal growth arc. I'm just saying that the fact that his cutesy, aggravating, ephemeral,
he's very childlike.
Yeah,
yes.
But that disappears. He's done the fucking business this time. He's like, I'm going to go in here. Yeah. I want to be part of this. I need to find my hidden destiny versus the whole, let's play some games because I want to amuse myself. Like,
it's,
that,
it's called a character arc.
Okay. I'm aware, Jen, but okay. I'm just saying the growth is very rapid and I don't see much sign of the Tihi Graha in the final Graha.
You know, you're making extrapolations based on like how you feel about the character, and that's totally fair. And I'm always like, benefit of the doubt, benefit of the doubt, benefit of the doubt. But this is a very serious fucking moment. And can you imagine like having to make this decision yourself, saying goodbye to everybody that you've grown to love, knowing what's ahead of you for the next thousands of years, and trying to like keep it together and stay the course? You're going to have to adopt a level of...
I'm not saying that doesn't make sense in terms of the character arc that we experience as players and as characters. I'm noting that we've lost that aspect of Graha.
Yeah. But yeah, like you meet him and you have a certain opinion. And when you leave him, you have a totally different opinion.
Correct. Those are true statements, Jen.
Correct. And you have immense respect for this person. And now you're like, and now he's gone. It's the way it goes sometimes.
So I have to say in general, Jen, that like most things in Realm Reborn, this played much better for me now on the second go around with the further research than it did on the first time. Like I mentioned last time, this questline had some things that took me out of it in general. Some of the character moments kind of took me out of the storyline because they kind of stretched my immersion in it.
Yeah.
But this time I knew they were coming and I was at peace with that. So it's not going to, I guess, have that be such a shock to me. And also there's a lot more to the story besides what is presented in the cutscenes and in the dialogue itself. And I think that knowing this stuff really helps to understand the story, at least for me.
Yes. And every subsequent expansion feeds that and recontextualizes it and allows us to appreciate it better. Heavensward, big time, Stormblood, a little bit, but like it's more like a character. It expands on somebody's character. So like having all of this and then look like, literally every fucking expansion, you can take some of that back to the Crystal Tower and do it again and be like, I got it.
Any other comments, Jen?
No.
Weird. Yeah, it's been quite a journey. I really enjoyed it on the second playthrough, much more so than on the first, like I mentioned.
Yes, because we know what the fuck.
Yes. So that was really gratifying to me to go back and re-experience this with different eyes.
And also, I'm like, I really hope we see Nero again. Like, please let Nero show up and let us interact with him in some capacity, which is batshit. But that's you know, if you talked to me before Crystal Tower, I'd be like, no, fuck that guy. And now I'm like, I want to be his friend.
I'm also very happy to get the chance to go through these on Min Eye level, because that really also recontextualizes the dungeons themselves.
Yeah.
Great. Well, Jen, thank you, and thank everyone who joined us and everyone in general.
Yes, high fives all around.
High fives all around.
Yeah.
Next time, we're going to be hitting that culinarian job quest.
Yeah. No more heavy shit. Let's get into some stupid shit. And that will do it for today's episode. Thank you all so much for listening and being awesome. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can at what's our email address? At podreturnffxiv@gmail.com. Or check the show notes for our Discord and join up. Maybe make some friends. Talk about your glams. Talk about what you're doing in game. Talk about really anything. Just post pictures of your pets. That's new. That's great. And if you want to join us on group runs, that is how you would do that. And we also have our Patreon, patreon.com/podreturnffxiv, where for $1 a month, you get access to some extra content that we post on a monthly-ish basis. Some of the seasonal events, well, all of the seasonal events, and some other shit. Also, our Final Fantasy XI series, the Vanadil Vansplainer, is also published on the Patreon. But yeah, with that, we hope you enjoyed the episode. Have a good day or night, and we will see you next time.